On the question of racism, is there any scientific basis for racism, i.e., is there any real difference between people who have different coloured skin or look slightly different from the people around them in the countries they live? In the past, you had a kind of pseudoscience that tried to prove that blacks or other nations were inferior, and you still get people doing that today. Not so long ago, there was that scientist who came to Britain, didn't get very good reception, and he's still claiming that there was a scientific basis for proving that, first of all, that there's such a concept as race, and two, certain races are inferior to others. But we know there's absolutely no scientific or biological basis for such thinking. And particularly the Human Genome Project, if you look at it, shows, you know, that from a scientific point of view has put any final nails that needed putting in the coffin of racism, because it showed that there's absolutely no basis whatsoever in DNA or any other aspect of biological thinking that can back up this idea of racism. Racism has no basis in science. It's actually a social question and a political question. And racism is deliberately fostered by the ruling classes because it's a useful tool in dividing working people. You see, the majority of the population in any country is made up of people who work for a wage. They're wage workers and they work for an employer. Whether you do that in a car factory, bolting nuts on wheels, or whether you're sitting at a computer in a bank, you're working for somebody else who pays you a wage. Now, if all these people are united and are conscious of their power, then the people at the top are going to be in trouble. So they find a convenient way of dividing workers along different lines. It's not just racism. I mean, what's the basis for the division in Northern Ireland? Surely it's not colour of skin. It's religion. It's not even a language divide. They speak the same language. In other countries, it can be a linguistic question, but they look for divisions whereby they can divide the mass of the workers one against the other and thereby dominate them. Now, there's also lots of subtle ways in which they do this. I get my freebie journal. I think we all get, in every neighbourhood, in every borough of London, you get these free journals. And they're pretty miserable and depressing reading because they're usually about an old lady that was coshed or mugged in a house or a girl raped in the back street somewhere or other. But what I find curious is that, for example, if in Woolwich, near where I live, a girl is raped, if the rapist is black, then the article says, young black man rapes girl. If he's Muslim, it says, young Muslim rapes girl, whatever. If he's white or Christian, it doesn't say, young white English Anglo-Saxon Christian Protestant rapes girl. No, it just says, young man. Now, these are little subtle differences, and it's there actually to promote this idea that the criminal element is the black or the immigrant or whatever, and it's to inculcate in the minds of people racism, and pit one against the other. Now, we reject all that as Marxists and as socialists, and we oppose all forms of discrimination, whether it's based on the colour of your skin, the language you speak, the religion you believe in or don't believe in, whatever your origins are. We are opposed to any form of discrimination based on sex difference, colour of skin, age. I'm particularly defending that one. I'm against any prejudice against people who've got beyond a certain age. And what we pose is the necessity for class unity across all boundaries, across all borders, whether they be skin colour, religion, language, etc. Now, the question is, has racism always existed in the same way, in the way that it exists today? You know, some people might argue that racism is a natural reaction of human beings to anybody that's somehow different to them. Well, We would argue that's not the case. If you look at history, racism has not been as it is today. In fact, racism in the way we know it today comes into existence with the development of capitalism itself. And the most glaring and blatant form of racism and oppression surely was the enslavement of millions of black Africans who were taken to both North and South America to work on the plantations. Now, slavery has been abolished, but that's not the end of the story. The racism which was developed to back up that terrible crime continues today because it's a useful tool. For example, it was the other day they published figures that show that in Britain, if you're a young black or Asian, you're 7 times more likely to be stopped by the police on the street than if you're white. And what is that if it's not blatant racism and prejudice? In the USA, it's incredible if you look at the figures. If you look at the prison population of the United States, apart from the fact that it's the highest prison population in the world, higher than even China, with a much bigger population, there are 2.3 million Americans in prison, which is about 1 in every 100. But if you look at the male population, it's a bit higher. It's 1,384 every 100,000. But if you look at the black males, it's 4,789 per 100,000. In apartheid South Africa, which after all must have been the most glaring example of a racist state in the recent period, in 1993, there were 851 black males per 100,000 in prison. So in the United States today, they imprison far more blacks than the hated apartheid regime. And if you look at young black males between the age of 25 and 29 in the United States, it's 11,700 per 100,000. 11.7% of black youth male in the United States are in prison. This is an incredible situation if we think about it. Now, why is it? Well, clearly one factor is poverty. You know, one way they look at crime is percentages of ethnic groups. Well, I would argue, why don't you look at the percentages of classes in prison? Ignore the colour of the skin. Look at poverty levels and see what percentage of each level is in prison. And I'm sure you'll find that the poorer layers are the ones that provide more people for the prisons. And combined with that, also, of course, discrimination. We know for a fact, for instance, that in the United States, if somebody murders somebody, if they're black, they're more likely to be sentenced to death than if they're white. That, what else is that but clear prejudice? And it's not just racist prejudice. I would argue it's class prejudice, because it's hitting one of the poorest layers of society. And I said poverty. In the United States, 13.2% of the population lives below the poverty line. But among the black population of the United States, it's 25%. Among the whites, it's about 10%. It shows you the differences. That amongst the poorer layers of the US population, the blacks are a much bigger percentage, which shows that they're still discriminated against all these years after the abolition of slavery. Last year, unemployment figures, whites, among the whites, just under 4%. Unemployment amongst blacks in the United States, 8.2%. All this is in spite of, if you look at what happened in the last 50 years, there have been certain improvements amongst certain layers of the black population in the United States. There's clearly a larger black middle class. A certain layer of the black population has risen up in society, and we even see that in the politics. I mean, Condoleezza Rice, for example, or even Obama himself, who might even become the first black president of the United States, or Colin Powell, who advises Bush and is one of the top military men in the United States. And there are individuals who have become millionaires and billionaires who are black. But you notice that these blacks who have risen up in American society don't actually do very much for their brethren. They've risen up in society, and they behave exactly the same as the white capitalists and the white ruling class, You don't notice the rich black in America having a different position, say, on the war in Iraq than Bush has. But while this small layer has risen up, the vast majority of the black population in the United States remains poor. And look at the wage differentials. In 2005, we have the figures for employed blacks were earning, on average, 65% of what white people were earning on average. And if you consider that in 1975, blacks with a job were earning 82% of what white workers were employing, you can see that in the last 30 years, there's actually been a worsening. It's gone backwards. Up till the 70s, it was improving as the general boom of capitalism, within the context of the general boom of capitalism. And since then, the poorer layers of society have become poorer. Not just blacks, it's a general phenomenon internationally. But you see in these figures what it means for the black population. If we see what happened in New Orleans with Katrina, that really revealed the real situation of the black population in the United States. When I spoke to our Nigerian comrades, they were saying to me that when they saw the scenes on television of New Orleans, they said to me, "We thought it was in Nigeria." He said, "Everybody that was on the streets homeless was black. The conditions that they're in are terrible. The state took ages to rescue these poor people. It felt like it was Nigeria. And yet, it's in the richest country in the world that this happened." Now, if we go back to the origins of the question of slavery in the United States, it's connected to the development of racism. Because actually, the first blacks in the United States were not slaves. You know, the general myth is that the first blacks were brought as slaves. They went as servants, indentured servants. And you had in the United States indentured servants who were white and black. They were very basically poor Europeans, poor blacks from Africa, who in exchange for a passage to the United States to escape the poverty they lived in their homes, in their homelands, they sold several years of labor to the people paying for their passage, and thereby not slaves, but several years of obligation to work for the people who had paid. Now, this was in the early 1600s. The problem with these indentured servants is that once they'd done their term and paid off their debt, the whole reason for going to America was to improve your position, and you'd move on. You'd leave the plantation or whoever it is that was employing you and look for something better. Now, how did the concept of racism develop? Because if we look at history, if we look at, say, go back to the ancient world, the Greco-Roman world, we don't see a concept of racism which is you see a black man and you think immediately inferior. It wasn't the case. When I was doing a bit of research on this, I found references to the black emperor Septimus Severus. Of course, he was a North African origin. He had a black skin. He wasn't a black from the sub-Saharan Africa, but he was from North Africa. He had a black skin, and he governed Britain for a while. And when I was doing some research, I found some absolutely disgusting websites. One of them was clearly a Nazi website, who were hammering this idea. And there was a picture of the statue of Septimus Severus, and these idiots said, "Doesn't look very black to me." And I was thinking, yeah, it's made of stone, and the stone is white. And he was from North Africa, and, you know, you can't actually get stone that's quite exactly the colour of the skin that Septimus Severus would be. But what it shows, though, is that an individual like this could rise right up to the top of the Roman Empire. He was actually from what today, I suppose, is Libya. And the Romans referred to Africans as Ethiopians, if you look at the maps and that. They didn't consider the colour of the skin as a difference which made them in any way less human. There were some who attempted, even in the first centuries AD, to try and raise this idea. But if you look at, for instance, even St. Augustine said in his writings that All humans, you know, whatever colour they are, they all originate from the same place. So this concept that You had inferiority was linked to skin, didn't exist. What the think about it. Most of the slaves in the Roman Empire were not black, they were white. And therefore, the concept of inferiority was linked to whether you were a slave or not. And it didn't really matter what ethnic background you came from. A slave was inferior because he was a slave. And somebody who wasn't a slave could easily be made one by losing in a war with the Romans or the Greeks earlier on. The modern concept of racial prejudice, racist ideology, comes into being in the 16th and 17th century in the early period of capitalist development. And it becomes a big thing with the growth of capitalism. In fact, it was Malcolm X who said, "You can't have capitalism without racism." It's a very useful tool. When you've lost, you see, with slavery, the slave is obliged to work for you. He can't leave, he can't join a union, he can't go on strike, although they can rebel, as Spartacus showed that. But in a modern society where workers can organise, racism is much more useful. Now, as I said, going back to the question of the indentured servants, as they eventually moved on, there was the plantation owners and the early capitalists in America needed to find a mechanism whereby they could force the servants to compulsory labour, to stay on the land and not abandon the land. And there was a huge agricultural potential in the southern states, particularly in the development of the cotton trade. And also, if you think about it, cotton was an important element in the development of capitalism itself. Not just in America, but in Britain. Think about it, the Lancashire mills, where did the cotton come from? It came from the work of the black slaves in the southern states. Now, slavery became the answer to the problem. Why have indentured servants who can move on, and then you have to look for others? There's an element of that, and you have to actually offer them some reasonable kind of wage to keep them. The answer is slavery. The Portuguese were into it big time. Most of the slaves were actually taken to Brazil in the slave trade. The solution was adopt slavery as a system, and in the period from the 16th through to the 19th century, 12 million black Africans were enslaved and taken across the Atlantic, as we know from all the documentaries that we've seen and all the books that we've read, in absolutely terrible conditions. It was, they would even do things like throw slaves overboard if the weight was too high, showing that they treated them as if they weren't human beings as far as the slave traders were concerned. They were just almost like pack animals. Now, in 1790, you had about 700 black slaves in the USA. In 1808, the slave importation was officially banned. Slavery itself wasn't banned, and it continued as an illegal trade, a profitable trade. And on the eve of the Civil War, which was to lead to the abolition of slavery, you had about 4 million black slaves in the United States. And the advantage of having black slaves, of course, was that if a slave escaped, anybody that saw him on the streets knew that it was a slave because of the colour of his skin. In Roman times, if a slave escaped to another part, I suppose he could disguise himself, because they were mainly white slaves. This was an advantage for them, of course. Now, with this, how do you justify this treatment of these millions of human beings? You have to invent an ideology which says that they are inferior, and to a certain degree, that they're not even human beings. Because slavery, before it was brought back in under the early days of capitalism in America and in Latin America, was obviously considered a terrible thing to do. It was something of the ancient world, which had been abolished long ago. To bring it back in, you've got to find some excuse. And that's where this racist ideology develops. They spread it, that the black is inferior, etc. And that justifies. We're not ill-treating a human being. It's something different. And it becomes an integral part of capitalist society. They developed the cotton plantations with the slaves, very cheap labour. The export of cotton allowed the textile industry to develop, and, as I said, an important part of the development of capitalism. Of course, all this didn't go without some rebellion on the part of the slaves themselves. Throughout the whole history of slavery in the United States, there were 250 slave revolts recorded in different parts and different times in the United States. The problem, however, is this with slavery. Why was it abolished in the end? Was it because the capitalists and the plantation owners suddenly woke up and realized they were doing something terrible? It wasn't to do with that. You see, the problem with a slave is that although he's very, very cheap, you don't even have to pay him wages. You just feed him and keep him on your farm. The problem with the slave is the slave has no incentive, for instance, to respect the machinery that he's using. Why should he or she be interested in looking after the machine or the animal they've got or increasing productivity to the maximum rate? What's in it for him at the end of the day? He stays a slave and has nothing in it for him. Marx made the point that there was a limit to slavery and the development of modern machinery and technology. It becomes incompatible at a certain point. And therefore, there's a difference between your slave and the wage earner. The wage earner, is at least he's getting his wages at the end of the week or the end of the month for the work that he's doing. And also the development of capitalism in the United States, particularly industrial capital in the northern states, required free proletarians. If we think about it, going back to the development of capitalism in Britain, when most of the population was tied to the land, capitalism required freeing the peasants in Britain. They did it very nicely by forcing them off the land, taking the land off them, and amassing them in their millions in the cities in terrible conditions. But technically speaking, they were freer. In what sense? Free to sell their labour to the capitalists. And the northern capitalists required labour, and that's that the economic essence, let's say, of the struggle to abolish slavery. There was also a political conflict between the northern elite and the southern. And this is what, I don't want to go into the details of it, this is what leads to the Civil War. But the unevenness of the forces can be seen in one little detail. The economics of the two sides, just the state of New York, the economy of the state of New York, was four times larger than all the southern states put together. Therefore, what you have is the development of a modern industrial capitalist class requiring a different type of economy and breaking the back, therefore, of the elite in the South. Some of the blacks who had achieved freedom enlisted massively in the army. Others escaped to the North to try and join in this fight. But interestingly, if you look at it, even Lincoln and the white northern capitalists did not initially start that war with a clear aim of abolishing slavery. It was more a conflict within the two wings of the ruling class. I found something interesting, obviously being of an Italian background. Garibaldi, who seems to have his nose everywhere, was invited at one point. Because the northern forces weren't doing too well in the early stages, they actually wrote a letter to Garibaldi. If you know, Garibaldi was he led the forces that united Italy and organized an uprising in the south. While he was in exile, he took part in several wars in Brazil and other parts. And he was always on the side of the progress in this. They sent him a letter because of his military skills, and they asked him if he would lead some of the troops in the Civil War. He answered, he actually asked a question: is this war for the emancipation of the slaves? And the reply he got back was a kind of, well, not quite, we've got to be careful, we can't, freeing 4 million blacks suddenly is a dangerous thing, and Garibaldi insisted, and he actually said, he sent a letter at one point to Lincoln, and he said, you want to win this war quickly, declare immediately that all the slaves are free, and offer them land and machinery to run the land, and you'll win this war far more quickly. They didn't accept the offer, and Garibaldi never moved. But it shows you the thinking of the people at the top. And the blacks, in fact, were not allowed to fight until late in 1862. It, only when it seemed, you know, the balance of forces was such that they required the forces of the blacks, did they allow that. Now, cutting the story short, because I haven't got much time, the result, obviously, of the Civil War was the abolition of slavery. But did it mean the end of racism? Did it mean the end of inequality? It did not. Racism was institutionalized into the United States. The white plantation owners still controlled the means of production. They controlled the land and the machinery, etc. Many of the poor blacks, through indebtedness, the freed slaves, were forced back into servitude. Some of them had to go back and work as servants for the former slave owners. There was a wave of terror unleashed. The Ku Klux Klan was set up in 1866, and there was a kind of new form of slavery was introduced. Technically, they were free, but they got all kinds of ways of enslaving people. Hundreds of thousands of blacks were arrested and imprisoned for minor offences. And once you had on your record that you'd been a convict, you were marked for life, and the only thing that you had as a prospect was to be forced into a chain gang, and they built the railways, the roads, and many other things with this kind of labour. It was still cheap labour, although technically speaking, free. And all this was combined with a segregation which was very similar to what we had in South Africa. Now, in the early 20th century, you had, and earlier, you had political developments within the black population in America. Black nationalism, Pan-Africanism, and even a kind of back to Africa idea was developed. Some people theorized that the only safe place for the blacks in America were to go back to Africa.